It's time to cast your mind back to 2008. After the agony of a playoff final defeat the season before, United looked to dust themselves off and try again to get back into the Football League. With the departure of Jimmy Quinn, the board turned to relative unknown Gary Brabin to guide the youths back to the promised land. This episode gives us an extraordinary look at that season through the eyes of the manager. In collaboration with the British Heart Foundation's Heart Month, we discuss Brabin's misdiagnosed heart condition, which ended his playing career, his transition thereafter into management, and of course his time at United, where we came agonisingly close to promotion automatically and via the playoffs. As always, please subscribe to UTAS wherever you listen to your podcasts and follow us on social media for more content. Enjoy the pod. Right then, news fans, joining us on this very special pod is Mr. Gary Brabin, former boss. How are you doing?
I'm very well. Thank you very much, Jordan.
Well, thank you for joining us. I think it's not going to be a surprise that we're going to spend most of this pod talking about your time at United. Short time, but a lot happened. But before we get there, I just wondered what you've been up to recently. You're currently a man working two jobs, right?
Yeah, so I'm a director of football at TNS, who mm-hmm. play the Welsh League. So we're having a particularly good year this year. And I'm also assistant manager at Oldham Athletic, and we're currently in a strong position at the moment as well. So at the moment, it's paying off.
Yeah, just quickly on Oldham, it's a club that I remember the early years of the Prem and Joe Royal and all that. So I remember them being a massive, massive club, gone through a lot of struggles. But how's things at the club at the moment? How's the outlook? Is it looking more positive?
Yeah, I think it is, because they've been took over by new owners who are fantastic people, also Oldham supporters. So I think that helps. And, you know, they're sort of turning it round. It's the club's been in, you know, free fall for a few years now. And there's been a lot of, you know, sort of bad press around it and a lot of disappointment from a fan's point of view over the last few seasons. So these new owners have come in and, you know, they're sort of turning things around and investing in the club, and, you know, everything seems a lot more positive, and, you know, that certainly helps when you're getting the results. But, you know, I think everyone knows the people who are running the club and know the heart's in the right place, and it's definitely a club moving in the right direction.
How does it compare being an assistant manager, a number two, to being top dog? Do you prefer it? Do you not prefer it? What's the crack?
I think depending on who you work with, I think you sort of, you know, I think you'd always want your staff to be sort of part of, you know, you want to be a management team. And, you know, I sort of try to manage like that when I had my staff, and, you know, I go into it with them same sort of approaches that I have as a manager. Obviously, it's, you don't take it home. You don't have to deal with the board. You don't have to deal with the fans. You don't have to. So I think there's little bits that aren't as intense as being a manager. I thoroughly enjoy my time as being a manager, but it sort of detaches yourself a little bit away from the potential problems, away from the football, which, you know, I get to just sort of enjoy the day-to-day and with the players and the recruitment and sort of planning for the next game. And I enjoy that.
And how do you balance in having a second job and again, a completely different one, right? Did you say director of football or sporting director for what you said there?
Yeah. I think it come about because I enjoyed my job at TNS. It's a really good job. It's a great club. But a lot of the owner there.
There as a player, weren't you, at one point?
I've played there. So this is my third stint going back. I went back as an assistant manager for a short time as well. And it's a really good club, driven by the owner who's, you know, sort of man-made the club, if you like, and he's so passionate about it. And is, you know, we get to play in the Champions League, if, you know, obviously if we win the league, and that, you know, that's a fantastic experience. So, you know, we've come in and we're in a good place at the moment. You know, there's some good young players who are getting a lot of interest. We're in the Scottish Anglo Cup final. We're currently 17 points clear at the top of the league, and we're still in a semi-final and another cup final in the Welsh Cup. So we're in a good position. Looking forward to Europe as well. So it's good, but it is hard. It's something I enjoy. Like you said, you go back into management, you're 24/7. So this also gives me me fix in terms of, I'm busy 24/7, and I think the only sacrifice is the family, really. I think they're glad to see the back of me.
What's it like working in Welsh football since the whole Wrexham Ryan Reynolds thing? Is it frustrating to see that happening down the road, or are you a happy man that Wrexham are doing so well after being in the non-league for a long time?
No, I think you're always pleased to see clubs sort of getting back. Cambridge have been in that position. There's a lot older currently in that position. There's a lot of clubs that have good history, league clubs who've fell into non-league football, and it's sad. And Wrexham, even before all this Hollywood sort of press, it was a club that I sort of liked, and you sort of want them to get back quickly, as I do with all the ex-league clubs. And there is a little bit of friendly rivalry, I think, between TNS and Wrexham, but I think there's no direct rivalry, because we've got our sort of aims and ambitions, what we're doing, and they have theirs, and they seem to get a bit more press with it being in the English system. But I don't think there's no animosity. I think it's healthy that clubs are all getting that success.
Yeah. I'm just bitter because they've obviously got Paul Mullen, but never mind, eh? You touched on Cambridge a second ago. We're obviously miles apart from where we were when you were at the club in non-league, alongside Wrexham. We're now in League One. We're in our third season in League One, and all being well, touch wood, we'll be here again next season. Do you ever keep an eye out for sort of Cambridge results and how things are going, or any of your past clubs? And did you think when you were at the club, you could see Cambridge getting back into league and maybe going up a bit further?
Yeah, definitely. I absolutely loved my time at Cambridge. My now wife, we lived up there as well, and we were devastated leaving. Really loved the area. It's a fantastic area. The support deserved more success than what they were getting at the time. The supporters were fantastic, and it was a really good club. It just wasn't. I think the owner now, Paul Barry, he wasn't in the country at the time, so he entrusted people to sort of run the club from afar, and that never really worked. So much so, I think I actually had 4 chairmen in that year. I was the
manager. Oh, wow.
So that's like it was a big thing. It was a big thing. So it wasn't steady and sort of stable behind the scenes at the club at the time, but I really loved my time at the club, and like I said, I was gutted leaving.
Well, we'll talk plenty about your time at the club in a second, but you were obviously a player before you got into management. I just wondered how your playing career started. Was it always a dream to be a player, or?
Yeah, it was. I loved football. I think I'm like a typical street footballer type example of. I grew up, all the sort of, what these sort of look for now for a tough background. I think I certainly had that education coming through. And it was good sort of, I was always passionate about football. I come from a single parent family. I was the oldest of 5, playing in the street with a ball, with my Everton kit on. every single day with an Everton kit, I always wanted to play football, I was at Everton as a kid, and I remember which was with a pattern emerged there throughout my career. They were making a decision on 3 of us to sort of keep on, and I think the other 2 got kept on, and I think I got sent off for about the 4th time in a month that year, and decided they weren't going to keep me. And and I ended up I went to Stockport after that from an apprenticeship.
Who were the other 2 that got kept on? Did they ever push on and play in the Prem? Did they come to be big names, or
no? I don't think they were big names, massive names, but Can't remember one of the kids' names, but he had a half decent career. Sort of around the lower leagues and that. I'm not really sure, to be honest. It was sort of, you know, but it was I enjoyed that, and you know, I was fortunate enough to make a professional footballer, and you know, you sort of, and I have no regrets, and I'm, you know, delighted that I've been fortunate enough that I've had a career, but you always sort of believe you could have done better.
You've touched on it already, and I was humming and hawing, Gary, about asking you this one, but you've touched on the red card, so I'll bring it up. Your Wikipedia page references, and I'm being polite here, a poor disciplinary record. Do you think you were a dirty player, or do you think maybe you're just a bit misunderstood?
A little bit of both. I don't think I was dirty. No, do you know what? It's funny, like, you sort of watch the way kids are now, and the certain traits, and you know, we're in a sort of society now where you sort of get pigeonholed, and I look back and I sort of question, and it's something I don't know whether I can get to. I actually look back and think, did I have ADHD? I would actually go as severe as think I might have had ADHD, because I don't think I was, you know, I didn't intentionally go out to, you know, I think away from the football, I think a lot of people who knew me would sort of say I was a different person on the pitch and, you know, than what I was off it. And, you know, and I think, it did affect my career. Like I said, I try not to have any regrets. In one hand, it probably makes the person you are. But, you know, I think that did sort of affect my career a lot. And it did affect the way I played, and it did affect the way people managed me, and it did affect a lot of things, I think, in football. But like I said, you know, I think nowadays you get a lot more guidance and support with stuff, whereas, you know, it was less so, I think, back in them days.
That's really fascinating. Yeah, I guess it's one of those things that's just more aware, and perhaps, you know, having people like yourself that have gone through it kind of help with that. A couple of quick fire questions about your time as a player, just to get your memory going there. What would you say your favorite memory as a player was?
A lot, really. I think because what I said to you there before, I think the you know, with the sending offs and the way I was as a player, I think I almost become a bit of a gunslinger as a player. In terms of, I seem to get most of my moves when managers were under pressure and clubs were in a, you know, in a relegation spot, and you know, I'd seem to get signed on that bravado. So you know, I signed for a lot of clubs who were bottom of the league, sort of needed snookers to stay up. They'd sign me as the last throw of the dice, and you know, and I pride myself on the fact that I've never ever been relegated.
Amazing! Wow.
Yeah, so that's that, you know, and I think they are good stats when you look at the times of signing for clubs and how many points adrift they were, and you know, and that's happened to, you know, I'd done it Hull City. Hull City was a fantastic time when I went there and I'd done it, but you know, I've also done it at clubs like Chester, Southport when I was in non-league, and you know, there's a few clubs I've sort of signed for, and you know, and I think it's nice getting promoted. I've been promoted through the playoffs, and you know, but I think sort of going to a club where it's, I wouldn't say on its knees, but sort of desperate to be saved is a little bit more fulfilling, I think, when you can achieve that. And I think I'd say probably the Hull one was one that, you know, you sort of, it wasn't until we actually stayed up you realised how important it was.
Amazing. Favourite goal you ever scored? I know you weren't, you scored a fair few actually, looking at your stats, but obviously.
Yeah,
not.
No, I wasn't. I don't think I really scored tap-ins. I always seem to struggle. Tough question. I don't know. But I did, you know, when I did score, I seemed to score decent goals as opposed to, you know, tapping in the back stick. I think, you know, so I was fortunate enough to score a few decent goals, yeah.
Nice, nice. Who would you say the best player you ever played against was?
In terms of name or actually performance?
I'd say their performance when you were playing against them.
So this is a bit of a strange question, this really, because strange answer when people ask me this question. So, you know, I've played against all the big names, your Zola, your Zolas, your Mark Users, and Michael Owens, Robbie Fowlers, and Elkers. So I played against all top players, but I remember playing a game once and being baffled by this kid. And I was thinking, who's this fella? You know, we were playing a team, and it was against Tranmere Rovers. Mm-hmm. So I knew most of the players. Anyway, I'm running around with my ADHD, booting everyone. and I couldn't get near this player. And he was brilliant. And I come away and I thought, and he's a really good player, him. And, you know, I remember him. I actually know him now. I spoke to him since, and he's made up and he keeps telling everyone I'm the best. Yeah. But and I was telling people, and they were all going, really? Really? But then he went on a bit of a good run after that, and he had a good cup run to Tranmere, and he was like the main man. But I like called Dave Martindale.
Can't say it is a name.
And I remember watching him, and, you know, he went on this great cup run, and I remember him getting the ball. I think he's megged someone like Gary McAllister and gone past like a Gordon and set Sir John Aldridge up for a goal. And, you know, when he, I remember playing against him this one game. I'm thinking, wow, what a great player. And I've spoke to him since, and he definitely underachieved. You know, he wasn't there. I don't think he was dedicated to football. He'd be the first person to admit that. But he was a really good, talented footballer. And he was one player to come away from thinking, you know, he was a good player. But strange answer, I know.
It's a fascinating one. Like you say, they've got some big names in there. Just done a quick Google search. It looks like he just played for Tranmere, according to Wikipedia. So I don't know how accurate that is, but
fascinating. He played a lot of games for Tranmere.
Yeah. Okay. Last question about that sort of being a player there. But if you could pick one player who you played with and put them in the Oldham squad right now at their peak, who would it be? Who do you reckon you're missing in the Oldham squad?
It's a tough question.
God, I just thought you'd say Paul Carden straight away. No, you can pal.
I'll pick me. Go on, I'll have me.
Fair enough. Go on then. One last question about your playing career and really sort of how it came to an end, because, you know, the reason we're having this chat today is, well, we want to find out about your time at Cambridge and all the gossip, but also because it's the British Heart Foundation's Heart Month, and you, if I'm understanding this correctly, gave up playing due to a misdiagnosed heart issue. Is that right? You were sort of basically told you had a heart problem, but then later found out it wasn't that. It was all to do with overtraining.
Yeah, so it was, I can't even remember what year it was. I was actually at TNS. I was playing for TNS at the time. And again, you'll have to forgive me, ignorance here. I don't want to name the name in case I get it wrong, but someone had the heart live. It was the big one on the telly. Mm-hmm. Someone had the heart scare, and I know someone died as well around the same time. I know Terry Yolliffe's son, Gabby Yolliffe's brother, died with a heart scare. And it was around that time I had this heart scare. Just in a game, I just couldn't catch my breath. And it was something in Nottingham at the time. I come off as a precaution. You know, the physio was sort of strongly advised. I wanted to stay on the pitch, but, you know, the physio was waving to the bench. And so I ended up coming off, felt fine after it. But he was really concerned, the physio. So the physio, listen, you'll have to go to the hospital. Like, yeah. And he was phoning me every 5 minutes. Are you going to the hospital? Yeah. So, you know, in the end, I went to the hospital just as a bit of a precaution. As I'm in the hospital, I'm sort of getting all my bloods and everything sort of tested. They put wired me up and all that. And I'm sort of laughing and joking with the doctors, thinking it was just a routine check. Next minute, they tell me not to move, rush to emergency theatre. And I'm sort of looking up in the lights, and I've got all these doctors and nurses shouting, and I'm thinking, oh, this is a bit dramatic, you know. I start getting a bit concerned now. And I was in hospital for about 5, 6 days. Five, 6 days. And anyone who's been, in the middle of the night, you have you on a certain heart rate. And when you're asleep, if it falls below that, these alarms are going off. So I remember joking with them at the time, if there's nothing wrong with me heart before I come in, yous are definitely going to give me a heart condition with some of the. So anyway, it was sort of had all the tests. I was in there for a few days. And I never really felt like I got the answers I wanted. I had to keep going for regular checkups, weekly checkups. Pre-Cambridge, but I actually went up to Cambridge to see who at the time was apparently the top heart specialist in England. And this went on for over 12 months, I think it was nearly 18 months by the time I'd sort of come to the decision that, I was going to be a bit more sort of forceful with wanting answers. After the first couple of months, first few weeks, I had to make a decision on my career. My family were all obviously upset and worried. So I felt like everyone around me was sort of advising me to make that decision to sort of stop playing football, which I did. But then I always felt like I was sort of sitting around waiting for someone to come and give me these answers that I was searching for, which I never, ever got. I was getting all these heart checks. And then I remember I remember sitting in a hospital, but there was an old fella next to me who, don't know, he was 80-odd years of age, little fella with a cap, and I'm sitting there talking to him, and he went, "What are you doing here?" And I said, "Oh, I had a bit of a heart scare, and went, you're a bit too young to be in here." And anyway, I'm sort of, at this point, I'm living life sort of scared to pick anything up in case I drop. It was this sudden death syndrome, which is called hypertrophy cardiomyopathy, which is nicknamed as sudden death syndrome. So I'm sort of under the impression I could just exert myself and sort of drop dead. And I was living with that for, well over 12 months, like I said. Anyway, speaking to this old fella in the thing, he said, "Oh, you've told me I can't smoke, I can't drink, I can't do this, I can't do that." He said, "But I don't want to be a cardiac cripple." He said, "So I'll have 2 pints on a Friday and I'll have one ciggy," or whatever he was telling me. And then Wade sort of, was he spot on? I am living like a cardiac cripple. It has affected my life. The next day, I joined the gym. Mm-hmm. And it was probably 10 minutes, the whole thing had done. It was very light, but just it was the best I'd felt in, 18 months or whatever it was when I finished playing. It was the best I'd felt, both mentally and physically.
Amazing.
Just sort of, got in the pool for a little bit. I was on the treadmill just walking, a little bit of a light jog. And I think I'd done a few press-ups and a few sit-ups. And I literally was in this gym for 20 minutes and it was the best I'd felt. And I just started coaching at Everton's Academy. The first time I'd been at Everton's Academy. And they had a heart specialist at the time who worked in sport. And I got led to him. And it was him who said to me, "Look, Gary," he said, "I don't believe your condition was a disease. I think it was, blah, blah, blah." And I sort of went with that. That was the answer I wanted. Whether it was the right answer or whatever, but that was the answer I was sort of searching for. I always felt there was nothing wrong with me, but everyone was making me feel like I had this sort of syndrome. So, I think that the point of it is, whether I had the heart condition or not, I lived in that fear of thinking I had that for that 18 months where it was, it was that severe where, I remember, I think it was the heart specialist in Cambridge. I said, "Well, how will I know if I've got it or not?" And his answer to me was, "Well, we'll only know if you drop dead running for the bus."
Wow.
And I thought, oh my God. It was very, very scary. Now, listen, I think that was 27 years ago or something, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And I think we've learned more about the heart. So much more. I think we were quite naive, and I think hospitals and surgeons and doctors and specialists will tell you they were less sort of knowledgeable about the heart in them days than what they are now. I think the more sort of on the ball with the heart, and there's more testing going on, and and I think it's a better procedure than what it was then. And I think that's all credit to these sort of people who've, I know Gabby Orff does a lot when she lost her brother. She does a lot for the Heart Foundation, and and I know, the Mark Vivian Foe and stuff like that. So I think it's sort of started. I think as well, I remember because I was playing for TNS, I remember it was not just because of me, but after my condition, I know the Welsh FA in the Welsh Premier started doing the testing more as well. It was, they started doing heart testing as part of a, sort of with the younger players playing for Wales. Yeah. And stuff like that.
Now it's been that amount of time since you've given up playing, and the time has passed. How do you sort of reflect on that whole era and the fact that you've gave up playing? Like, do you regret that decision, or do you think it was the right?
No, because I mean, I wouldn't say it's the right thing. Like I said, I'm one of them people. I try not to have any regrets. I try not to look back and have any regrets. I think everything sort of takes you to where you are now, and it was, I would say, a low time. It was a sort of, I felt like I was sort of sitting waiting for someone to come and tell me what to do next, and it never ever happens, and you have to sort of go search for them answers and push yourself to, but obviously I wasn't reckless in my decision what I'd done. Everything I'd done, I was reading a lot more than what I'd ever done. I remember reading about the heart, these two, I can't remember the names at the time, but these two top German heart specialists, and I remember reading more about what they had to say than anything. And I did sort of spend a lot of time doing that, and but like once I sort of made the decision that was the all clear I needed when I spoke to the doctor at Everton, I sort of moved on from that and sort of started training a bit more, and then started playing. I was fortunate enough to have another 4 or 5 years playing part-time football.
So after the football ended, you got into obviously coaching, like you said, with Everton, but then eventually management, and I think it was Southport you were at before Cambridge. Like, was that always something you thought about, like getting into coaching and managing, or was it something that was sort of brought on a bit early, given that your career ended a little earlier than you wanted it to?
No, I think it was something I always wanted to do. But I remember when I was, they sort of encourage you when you're younger to sort of get into your coaching badges. But I remember going to the coaching badges, and I never enjoyed them. I never enjoyed the process of going for the coaching badges back in them days. Now, whether I wasn't ready, people saying, oh, you know, because you're still playing or whatever, I don't know whether, I just didn't enjoy it as much. And I sort of went down the sports science route.
Yeah.
And I was enjoying that. I loved the sports science side of things, and I was really getting involved in that and sort of done further education on it. And I was halfway through a diploma in sports science, and then the heart thing sort of happens during that. And I sort of come away from that a little bit more, because I used to love the fitness side of things. And like I said, you start thinking about things a bit more. And it was always my aim to be a manager. But you know what it's like nowadays? It's hard to get that sort of lift into management. And coming back, one of the clubs I played for was Southport.
Mm-hmm.
So they were bottom of the league. I signed in the January, needed Snookers to stay up. And I come in, and we stayed up. I got player of the year. And I was the next season, the club went full-time, and I was officially the first ever full-time professional footballer for Southport.
Yeah.
So it was a good thing for me to sort of go there. And then I ended up going back a couple of years later and being the manager there.
Well, let's talk now about the move to Cambridge United then, a bit that I'm dying to find out more about, because it was such a tumultuous year. How did the move to Cambridge United come about? Like, was there much competition for the role? Were you approached? Was it something you applied for?
I'd gone in at Southport, my first job, and I think we were like sort of or 14th, 15th in the table, and had gone in and got us into the playoffs. We got beat on penalties in the playoff semi-final.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a massive achievement from where the club were. And I had no, this is like the start of management, so I had no desire to sort of move on. I was enjoying me current job. I lived local. It was my first job. But there was a few sort of rumours of clubs interested in me even that early. And I sort of took it as a compliment and was sort of happy about it, but never sort of chased it. And then I was actually on holiday when I heard of the Cambridge interest. It was actually Paul Carden who called me, said, look, Cambridge want to speak to you. Would you be interested? And Paul was in the process of leaving.
I was going to ask about this. He was at United the season before, but then you got him back on loan, right?
Well, he only left for about a week, I think. Okay. It was. That's why we ended up getting him back. I think it was, listen, you'll have to refresh my memory. I might be a little bit sort of off the mark with a couple of dates and stuff like that at the moment, but I remember being on holiday and having this meeting with Cambridge. Comes up, and it was sort of, I'd gone up there and I just thought it was just going to be a meeting, but they offered me the job. Now, I know they'd just been on the back of a final.
Was it? Yeah. I was going to ask you about this. Yeah. Like, you obviously, you replaced the manager who had just got to the playoff final and obviously went very close to sort of getting promotion, finishing second in the league and only losing the final 1-0. So what was the atmosphere like at the club when you arrived? Like,
So they had to lower the budget. They were telling me they'd gone over the budget and what they'd planned and hadn't gone up. So it was going to be a less budget. So there was a big squad at the time. So I remember they were going to get rid of so many players, but, they got rid of, a few had gone already. And then whilst I was in the job, a few more were leaving. And I hadn't actually gone into Cambridge yet. This was all sort of verbally agreed and people were still leaving. It was almost like a bit of a fire sale to sort of get rid of people. And I remember the very first one I was involved in going for money. I'd never actually met him face to face, was the centre half, Morrison.
I wanted to ask you about him. Yeah.
Yeah, so I sold Morrison unbeknownst to me. It was already an agreed deal, but I sort of, was a little bit of a part of that. But this has all sort of happened while I hadn't even gone into the office. It was all sort of a meeting. We'd agreed everything. I was going to come back to sign the contract, but everything was verbally agreed, but things were still sort of happening. And I remember thinking, have we got any players left? Because I think there must have been, you'll probably have the facts there, but there must have been 13, 14 players left.
Mm-hmm. I haven't written it down, but I think there was quite a big turnover, wasn't there?
Yeah, so all the sort of, a lot of them were first team players, regular players had gone, and I sort of inherited, I think I still had about 14, 15 players left. So I knew it was going to be a lower budget. So some of the players, we were trying to get Paul Carden back. Mm-hmm. He'd only signed for Wrexham for a week. So we managed to do that. That took a little bit of time. And then there was a few players, because I was fresh from playing myself, there was a few players I wanted to bring to the club. Phil Bolland,
mm-hmm.
Mark Beasley, who were new, Lee McEverly. So they re-signed because I was coming in as manager.
Yeah.
I signed Andy Parkinson.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about Andy Parkinson, because he was kind of a name that sort of stood out because, of who he'd played for before. And I don't want to say like would have been the key player for the year, but you kind of sort of thought, oh, he could be the difference at this level. But, injury like really early doors.
Yeah, I
remember we played, was it Everton in the preseason friendly, and he looked class. I think he scored a couple and then just got injured. I don't even know if he played much.
Yeah, but he I think came he on. Start- in the- again, you'll have to refresh my memory, but I think he's played the first game, maybe the first two games, and he was brilliant, like I said, pre-season. You know, we thought we were going to hit the ground running.
Yeah.
And Parky done his knee. It was a real bad one. So, you know, he was out for, again, I think it was a good 6 months, might have been longer. So, we lost him very early.
How big a loss do you reckon that was? Like, was he a key part of your plans when you sort of joined?
Yeah, he was a key part of the plans. But, I mean, listen, I think there was a lot of, like I said, you know, we lost a lot of players. We had to lower the budget from the previous season. Anthony Tonkin I brought in as well. He was my first signing.
Mm-hmm.
Anthony Tonkin, he was one that I didn't know personally, but watching games, I really liked him, and we got into the club. So there was, you know, there was, I was quite confident because I knew players who I could get in who I knew would make us strong, but, you know, we were sort of working against the budget, and, you know, like I said, there was an exodus of players leaving the club, but, you know, we had a good, tight-knit group of players, and, you know, we started the season well. But, you know, Parky was going to be a big part of that. You know, fortunately, we got him back at the end, and, you know, we actually thought we were going to win the league, even at the end. It was, it always dragged me down the bend when these, you know, I think it was one particular club, I think it was Rushden Diamonds, who were a really strong side, and we got two great wins against them, home and away.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, the money had gone, they packed in, they were playing all the kids, and
I
at the time, who we were chasing, played them in a gimme, and I think they won 5 or 6-0. And then,
It was Weymouth.
And it was last game of the season. We knew Burton, I can't remember who we were playing, but we knew Burton wouldn't win.
Mm-hmm.
And we were playing Altrincham. And if we'd have won 5-0, we'd have gone up. We'd have gone automatic promotion.
Yeah, I remember.
It sort of put a bit of pressure on everyone at the time. And I think we ended up drawing 0-0 or something, or 1-1, was it? Or,
I think, but it was 0-0, wasn't it? But yeah, the whole Weymouth situation, like, I think we beat them once, and then maybe we drew. But then, yeah, like you say, they folded and started playing the kids. And Burton, when they played them the second time, got a big win. Yeah. And actually, you think about it, you know, we had to overturn those 4 or 5 goals. If they just played a normal strength side, it might not have been that. It might have been one goal or
even a defeat. You know what I mean? That was the bit that always stuck in our...
How did it feel at the time, that situation going on?
I remember we were playing Barrow away. And we knew it was a tough game, Barrow away. And we won. I think we won 2-0.
Yeah.
We knew before the game that Weymouth were playing all the kids, and we were gutted. We've had to go away to Barrow for a tough game, and, you know, they had a gimme. They had a gimme at home, and it sort of broke that. You know, we were catching them. We were catching them, and they looked like they couldn't recover, and then you get that gimme, and it sort of rescued them a little bit, and it ends up being the big difference at the end, yeah.
How does it feel like all these years later? Like, does it still pain you? Do you still get quite angry thinking about the whole Weymouth situation? Because could have, you know, the whole season could have turned out differently, your time at the club and so on.
Jordan, honestly, I feel like I'm repeating myself. I'm one of the people, I have no regrets. Whatever goes on, and you can't change it. And, you know, it's I do think about it at times. I hope, like I've mentioned it to you. So,
yeah,
you know, it's sad because I think we deserved it. I thought we were, you know, it was a great bunch of lads. You know, we had a very low budget as well at the time. You know, so we were a really good competitive side. Like that Everton friendly you were talking about, I remember David Moyes bringing a strong Everton side down and we beat them 4-1. Do you remember? It was a good side, and, you know, it was a shame, really, because, and, you know, it was all geared up for us to get promoted, and especially after the semi-final, everyone goes on about the semi-final, that was brilliant, and, you know, that felt like we got promoted that day when we won that, but it was just because I don't think the final gave a good sort of account of that Cambridge team that I had.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, I've never forgiven Weymouth. They're still in my bad books. You mentioned there the whole chasing down Burton. When I was preparing for this pod, I couldn't find for the life of me what the point total was at one point, because they were miles clear, weren't they?
Yeah, they were
absolutely miles clear. And you know, like you said, we had an all right start to the season, but sort of February onwards, it really felt like we sort of kicked up again.
We had a bit of an injury crisis, didn't we? Park, he was obviously injured, and I only had a small squad. I had one goal, again, another thing that come back to bite us. I only had one goalkeeper all year.
Yeah.
Potsy was the only goalie all season. We actually got a lad who we knew, who was not living too far away. He was working somewhere who we knew was a goalkeeper, and not paying him handsomely, but we, you know, I was sort of paying him out the old pocket of, you know, after the training session, I'd give him, you know, only 20 quid or something, or 30 quid.
Just to fill out the numbers?
Yeah, just to make it so we could have a small side of game and training, or
wow.
So we only had one goalie, and it was, you know, so we had a really small squad, and I remember we had, we got beat against Crawley, I think it was. We got tanked, I think it was 5-1.
Mm-hmm.
In a cup game, I think it was. It was a cup game, but we were down to the bare bones. And I think I had a bit of a rant at the time about the board after the game. Crawley come and, you know, they beat us. And to be fair to the board, they responded after that. And I brought in Scott Rendell after that.
Yeah, I wanted to speak to you about Scotty Rendell.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, well, that whole season, there's like quite a few names up front that we could talk about. You know, you've already mentioned Lee McEverly was the playoff hero the year before, but then didn't spend much of the season with you. Like, how big a loss was he, do you think?
Lee was brilliant. When I first come in, probably got himself in the best physical condition he'd ever been in. He was brilliant. You've seen him doing work on his own, which, if anyone who knows Lee McEverly, this wasn't the Lee McEverly people knew. You know, Lee sort of done what he had to do and got off. And, you know, I still speak to Lee now and we laugh. But he was pushing himself, and he started the season like a house on fire.
Yeah.
He was brilliant. And then he started to get a little bit sloppy. And I remember leaving. I remember one game, I left him out and he come on and scored. And he was... You know, he, I think he had too much respect to me, but he sort of like looked at me as if to say, I told you, or,
yeah,
me out, but I was made up. You know, that's the response I wanted. And I remember speaking to him, and I think we got another bit of a kick out of him, but it sort of never, I don't know. And then there was a little bit of interest in him. And I remember Rochdale were interested in him. And obviously he lived down there, and he'd done brilliant for me and for us. And I just thought it was the right time. Mm-hmm. To sort of let Lee go, sort of on a high. I didn't want him to spoil what he'd done, and I didn't want to fall out with him. And he'd done really well. He'd started brilliantly, and I've spoke to him since, and he actually regrets leaving.
Oh,
his
name comes up every time we play Burton. We're obviously in the same league as them now, so the memories of it wasn't your playoff campaign; it was the season before, but. That night when we were 2-0 down, he you know, scored a free kick and a penalty to make it 2-2. It's gone down in folklore. So was Rendell the replacement, and how did it go about getting him back to the club? Because again, not on your shift the season before, there was a bit of a cloud in which he left the club, went to our biggest rivals, Peterborough.
Yeah, so I knew there was a lot of sort of, but we knew we needed that to replace Lee. And I think we went without Lee for between Lee and Scott. Again, I'm not sure of the time scale, but we never had an out and out goal scorer for that time. And you know, I wanted the striker, but I just remember there was a few things that had fell through, and I was a bit disappointed with it. And like I said, I was very respectful of the budget; everything was within budget, and you know, there was not an excessive. That I wanted, and there was an opportunity to get Scott.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he was talking of him going to Crawley.
Yeah.
And I did. He would rather have come to Cambridge, but Crawley had sort of met whatever the loan fee was with Peter Blair.
I was going to ask, was there an element of Barry Fry doing Barry Fry things in terms of transfer dealings?
Did he put
a premium on it because it was us and there's the rivalry, which I could fully imagine.
But I remember it not being excessive. It wasn't excessive anyway. It was, you know, I think it was fair price. And, you know, I think they wanted Scott to get out and play. And Scott Cummins, he was brilliant. Again, he was, you know, he was what we were sort of looking for. Because I think at the time, you know, I remember us playing some great football. And, you know, Lee McEverley was scoring goals from that. Mark Beasley was brilliant in linking that up. And then he got injured as well, Mark. You know, and then Scott coming. And I brought in Chris Olroyd as well.
Well, what a find, right? Because he was a young lad when you brought him in.
Yeah.
And then, again, I think this was probably not on your shift, but the following season, he really kicked on. And I think he got him and Danny Crowe actually really kicked on the year after you left and scored a ton of goals. And Holroyd went off to Brighton, if I'm remembering it correctly. Like, how did his signing come around? Like,
he was just a young lad that I remembered from Chester playing. He was playing for Chester and he was what we were looking for, what we liked, but he was only young and a little bit naive. So I knew it was a bit of a, I couldn't afford to have sort of fringe players, if you like. They had to come in and hit the ground running. And so Chris, I trusted, would be good enough to come in and hit the ground running. But then, you know, it was, he come in and he done really well. I think Mark Beasley was struggling a bit this time now he had an injury, but was putting himself out to play. And I did think it did affect his performance a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, so it was an opportunity to get Mark right and put Chris in, and, you know, Chris done well as well. So it was, you know, it worked well.
I'm desperate to find out more about this chasing of Burton. Like you say, went to the final game of the season. What do you reckon instigated the whole them falling apart a bit and then us kicking on? Like, I think Clough left, didn't he? I think he got, did he get a job?
Yeah, Clough got the Derby job, was it?
That's it. Yeah.
I think Clough got the Derby job. And I thought we started the season well. Then, like you said, we tailed off a bit, but I think that was to do, you know, we had a small squad, like I said. You know, Lee McEverley, I felt it was right to move, let him go back home and play for Rochdale. And we were sort of under the impression we had that money to sort of bring in, and then it sort of never materialised, and it was a little bit of sort of, we probably needed a bit more leadership behind the scenes at the time, I felt, at Cambridge.
Mm-hmm.
There was no sort of go-to point. And I remember after the game when we got beat by Crawley in that cup game where, you know, we were down to the bare bones, sort of, I can't remember the statement, but I made a bit of a statement about the fact that Crawley are being able to go out and, you know, get players in a club our size with our support. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not being able to blah, blah, blah. And then, to be fair, the board come to me and said, look, you know, what do you want? And I said, I want Scott Rendell. And we got.
Amazing. Did you, and a squad, like, at what point did you think you could do it? Like, well, did you think you could do it? Did you think you could chase down Burton and overtake them? And if so, what point did you guys start thinking that?
Yeah, I mean, I can't remember but we always felt we were good enough to push up the league. And like you said, I think there was a point where Burton were very far ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't say we give up, but we always felt like, oh, have we left it too late? But, you know, we felt like we could catch them and, you know, we need to do something now.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I remember that Crawley game being a turning point for me as a manager in sort of getting what I felt we needed. But I can't remember the exact game. I just remember we went on a good run. I can't remember who it is against, but we started going on a bit of a good run, and all of a sudden, Burton were sort of getting back-to-back defeats, and there was the belief just seemed to get bigger and bigger and bigger, and we really genuinely believed we were, you know, we were going to get promoted.
I think it was like a double figure point difference, like a 12, 15
yeah,
point
it would
type
have been.
thing.
I think
it was
was.
a big, big number.
Yeah, it was.
I was remembering that chase down. Obviously, I remember the Weymouth situation, but I remember a specific result for us. I don't know if you remember this. A home defeat to Forest Green. Does this ring any bells?
No.
Okay. Because this was Forest Green, who, you know, not like Forest Green now with Dale Vince and the money and stuff like that. They were a pretty lowly conference team. And I think we lost 1-0 at home. I think that was the one that sort of really kind of derailed us a bit. Does that ring any bells?
A little bit now you've mentioned it, yeah.
I think we battered them and lost 1-0.
Vaguely, yeah. Vaguely, yeah. I just remember us getting to the last game. I mean, the strong bit for me, I think we always, you know, we had a couple of little setbacks. But I remember the big one being the Weymouth game for Burton, and us going to Barrow away, thinking, where's, you know, how's this fair?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we hung in there right till the end. And I remember us, we knew, we really, I can't remember who they were playing last game of the season, but we knew Burton would get beat.
Yeah.
And we had Tranmere at home, Altrincham at home. And we thought, you know, we knew, listen, you know, we didn't believe we were going to win 5-0, but we knew if we'd have won 5-0, we were going to get promoted.
What are your memories of that final day, Altrincham at home? Did you, you know, what do you say to the team knowing that you need to score 4 or 5 goals?
Yeah. Like, I remember Scott Rendell missing 2 absolute sitters in the first 10 minutes.
Great. That's not how to start.
I know. I remember missing. But I remember being disappointed with Altrincham.
Mm-hmm.
I remember speaking to their staff after the game and went, why did you do that?
Yeah.
Because they literally parked the bus. And when I say parked the bus, when they got the ball, they hoofed it up. And I remember Phil Bolland was at the back on his own.
Mm-hmm.
Was running back, getting the ball, running into their half again, and then starting the play again. Because they were just camped on the edge of the box. And 2-0-0. Anyway, I remember speaking to them after it, and I was almost like, you know, I was saying, why did you just do that? That, you know, last game, you had nothing to play for. Why have you done that? You know, why come out and play us? Come on out and have a game. And they were terrified that they knew we had to win 5-0.
Yeah.
They were terrified that we were going to tonk them.
Mm-hmm.
And they set up just defensively all week. Never worked on any attack because they just didn't want to get tanked. And, you know, so I think that shows a little bit of respect what they had for us, you know what I mean, as a team. But
certainly
never helped our cause.
Do you think that day and that result, do you think that impacted the playoffs and the final in either a positive or negative way? Like, do you think, obviously, like, the deflation from not getting the result, then all of a sudden you've got to pick yourself up really quickly to play two games
I think
in
it did
succession?
The first game. I think it did in the first game, if I'm honest, against Stevenage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it did. You know, we were a little bit feeling sorry for ourselves in that game. But then I think we quickly turned that round and lifted it. And, you know, I thought we were outstanding in the home game, which was fantastic. And we were ready. We were, you know, we were sort of ready, looking forward to the final. And again, you know, Potsy, the big thing I remember around the couple of days around Wembley was Potsy got injured on the Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
So the one goalie that we've had all season
mm-hmm.
gets injured the Thursday before the final. And
Adam Bartlett was your emergency call.
But it wasn't as easy as that, Jordan. Mm-hmm. It was Torquay were obviously contesting it. No, they've done it on purpose. We heard things like we've done it on purpose, and I'm thinking,
were they claiming you've got like a youth, like a
so
the kids?
Because we were tied into the college at the time, we were tied into the college, weren't we, or the university.
Okay, yeah.
So people were all registered under the same umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
So they were naming goalies who I'd never even heard of. who played for like the, you know, like the college or the university, or so it was like.
Is that the CRC connection? Because we didn't have a youth team, right? We had this sort of six form.
So it was players registered as goalkeepers for that, which they were questioning, why aren't they playing? Well, we haven't got another goalkeeper. This is our only goalkeeper. And that's what that took up most of my time.
Yeah.
So Thursday we were obviously dealing with Potts, who's distraught. He's done his ankle. You know, he knew we weren't going to play, so I had to sort of deal with that on the Thursday. And then the Friday before the game, between me and the secretary, we're sort of arguing with the league, we're arguing with the FA, we're arguing with Torquay. You know, we never got clearance. Now, in between all this arguing and finding out what we could do, we needed a goalkeeper.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew of Adam Bartlett. So, you know, we got Adam Bartlett to come up. We'd agreed a sort of one-off figure for him to come up to potentially play in this cup final if we got clearance. And it was really late Friday night. I'm normally in bed before the game.
Mm-hmm.
We sort of got the clearance for him to play. And it was.
How did that impact, obviously, preparations for the game itself? Because
it definitely impacted me.
Yeah, because, you know, you would be expecting your head coach to be, you know, running drills and training, looking at the videos, coming up with a plan for the game. But like you say, you're doing a lot of the legwork.
It's little things like you want to relax and have little team meetings and little stuff like that. But I remember sitting on the couch in this hotel for near enough the whole day and night, sort of waiting for calls, making calls, chasing things up, emails, stuff like that. And it was really sort of time consuming.
Was there any point, did anyone in the squad come to you and go, do you know what, Gary? I can do it. I can go and goal. Give me the gloves. I'll pull the shirt on for you.
All jokes aside, we were looking at that. Who's going to go in goal if, you know, we can't. I can't remember who it was at the time, but
I was going to say, who was your go-to?
You know what I think it was? I think it was Dave Challoner.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Sorry,
John Challoner.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I think John Challoner was going to go in goal. I'm almost certain, please don't quote me on that, but I'm sure he sort of put himself forward to be...
What a legend. Oh, right. Okay, I don't want to get too distracted with the final because I want to touch back on the semi-final very quickly. That second leg, how does that rate as an afternoon in your whole footballing story to date? Like the ups and downs.
Yeah, unbelievable. Sorry, Jordan, as I'm talking to you, I'm going to plug this in just in case.
No worries.
It was unbelievable. It was a brilliant... You know, we went into the game believing we could win.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, you know, the odds were stacked against us. And it was just a brilliant, it couldn't have gone any better the whole day. It was just a brilliant day. And, you know, it seems a bit of a blur, to be honest with you, even at the time.
Yeah.
It was
at the time, did you sort of on the sideline think, do you know what? Regardless of what happens with me at this club, this is a moment that this club will remember forever. You know, turning over a 3-1 deficit and winning an extra time. Do those kind of things sort of hit you and players when it happens, or you just lost in the moment?
No, it was just we believed we could win. But when it actually happens, it was just an unbelievable. It's just an unbelievable feeling.
My memory of that day, I was in Brighton the night before for a friend's birthday, and I had to get up early and drive back from Brighton. And I actually was in this shitty car because I was a young kid. I couldn't afford a decent car. Broke down at Dartford Tunnel on the way back. Closed Dartford Tunnel, got picked up by the AA, got fixed, and got back to Cambridge a little bit late, just missed kickoff. And I got in the NRE. I don't know if you remember this, literally just as, was it Gregory, the Stevenage striker, who then went on to play sort of championship? He went clean through. And I don't know if you remember this, one-on-one, and he just pulled it wide. And I literally arrived just as that shot was just creeping past the post.
I don't remember that incident, but I remember it was quite a, it must have been a fantastic game to watch.
Yeah,
I'm sure me and the opposing manager didn't feel the same at the time, but you know, it would have been a great game to watch. But it was, I just remember after the game, it was just, you know, we felt like it was written in the stars that we were going to get promoted.
One question that I do have to ask about the game, hopefully you remember this one. How offside do you reckon Scott Rendell was for the winner in extra time there?
Oh, I don't know, to be honest. I don't even remember that.
Don't watch the replay back, because if you if you were a Stevenage manager, you'd be fairly annoyed. It's a good yard.
I've had my fair share of them against me, so.
Well, going on to what you just said then, like, that all happened. Yeah, like, the euphoria, the high of sort of overturning this. Like, did you think the final was kind of a formality? You thought, you know what, we've got this, we've got the
no, I didn't. Now to go and I do genuinely it. Didn't. I didn't think that. I definitely think my preparation, my own personal preparation, was affected by the goalie situation.
Yeah.
And I'd like to think I'd have had a more positive effect on the team, because I felt like we didn't. It wasn't a good game. It wasn't a true reflection of us. It wasn't a true reflection
I was going to ask you about that, because, like, I think in the regular season we didn't beat Torquay, but we finished a long way clear of them on sort of the table and points difference. You know, going into it, we were obviously the favoured team. Like, do you look back at it now and think, oh, why didn't we win that game? Like, what happened, do you think, that just didn't click for us to?
Yeah, there's a lot of things in my head. You know, I remember, obviously, my own personal preparation before the game with the goalie situation, I didn't enjoy. And I didn't like that. I'm not going to name the player because I don't think it's fair. I wanted to make a substitution after about 15, 20 minutes.
Okay.
I regret not doing that.
I was going to ask, I know you said earlier you don't have regrets, or you try to avoid it, but was there anything from the day that you regret, or anything you would have done differently?
Well, sorry, not regret, because it's happened and it's thingy, but if I had my time again, I'd have done. And I never made that decision. So you look at yourself as a young manager, and you know, I look at the experience I've got now, and I definitely would have changed some things. Yeah, and that's one of them.
Yeah. I always remember possible red card for Torquay quite early in the game that didn't get given. I don't know if you remember that. And sort of a coming together and a possible elbow.
Vaguely, yeah. I remember there was a couple of things just didn't seem to be going our way. It just seemed like one of them days where it wasn't a true reflection of us. It wasn't, we didn't feel like we were getting our fair share of decisions. It wasn't, I don't even think it was a great Torquay performance. I didn't think they were good on the day. You know, I think they were there for the taking, if I'm honest. And yeah, it's we can't change what's happened, but you know, these are things that you do think about and speak about. You know, obviously I still speak to me, Paul Carden, Phil Bolland, Mark Beasley, Wayne Hatswell. We all still meet every year. I try and have a little drink over Christmas whenever we can. So we, you know, we always talk about things, and you know, we've got good memories and stuff. And yeah,
I love that. I mean, after the final, then, do you think if you'd stayed at the club, do you reckon you would have gone up the following year? Did you feel confident that, you know, the nucleus was there to kick on, and you're disappointed that you didn't?
No, because I think there was a few things going on behind the scenes which weren't sort of consistent to what we wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I never sort of trusted that I'd have that sort of I didn't trust that I'd be able to keep that team.
Okay. I was going to ask, like, I don't know how much you feel comfortable saying or whatever, but there was a rumour at the time, I remember, it was about not being able to sign, was it Daryl McMahon? You had him I think he joined late in the season or whatever, and I think you wanted to keep him on, and that wasn't signed off. So I don't know if there's any truth in that.
I can't remember the exact detail of all of it. There was a few things which, you know, I think weren't right. Listen, I definitely think the club become a better place, and it needed me to sort of make my stance and leave for it to get better.
Okay.
So I felt the club become more stable and a bit more sort of a point of sort of go to when it was sort of highlighted with the problems I sort of had.
Okay. You left the club then, and you know, a couple of things obviously sort of happened after you left, but one of them which I find really fascinating in a kind of a roundabout way of how the world pans out, but you went to go work with a manager who in the end would end up getting Cambridge United back into the league, yeah. Richard Money. Yeah. Like, what was he like? What was he like to work with?
Yeah, this night got on really well with Richard. You know, I know he was very sort of Marmite, wasn't he? He wasn't everyone's sort of cup of tea, but I think he had a lot of qualities. And I did. I really got on well with Richard. You know, he was. You know, I'd sort of gone in. I was looking for a manager's job and sort of got the job at Luton with him, sort of under the bravado that, you know, I was looking for a manager's job. I wasn't wanting to stay there long term, and then it sort of developed where he wanted me to come in and help him a bit more, and it sort of happened from there. But I remember I seen him not long after he just left Cambridge, you know, and I was delighted for him because, you know, it was like I said, I really had really, really good fond memories of Cambridge.
Were you gutted to have left United, like after getting to the playoff final?
I remember speaking to Paul Barry. Mm-hmm. He phoned me from America after it, and I sort of said that I didn't mean it in a nasty way, but I was disappointed I never got to meet him. You know, I would have liked to have sort of, you know, sat down with him and as a, you know, a chat with him and sort of, But, you know, I loved my time at Cambridge, and at the time, you know, I was absolutely gutted leaving, yeah.
Mm. There was a real saga around the appointment of Martin Ling, who I believe replaced you, and I think that shone a light on sort of who was in charge running the club on behalf of Paul Barry at the time. Do you think if there were sort of different persons involved in the club, things could have been different for you at United?
Listen, there were some good people as well at the club. There were some good people at the club. Mm-hmm. But I think it just needed a little bit of sort of direction, a bit of leadership. This is, you know, who makes the decisions, who's in charge, you know what I mean? And it just needed that little bit of sort of, you know, ownership, really.
Mm-hmm. All right, but back at Luton then, am I right in thinking that it was you in charge when Paul Carden joined Luton on loan? Is that right? Was it you that
brought
to Luton?
It was Richard Money who brought Paul.
Yeah.
So Richard Money brought Paul Carden in on loan.
But he was assistant manager for Cambridge at the time, right? Was that...
Yeah.
That must have been a weird situation, no?
Yeah, it was, but it was... I mean, I've even told Paul this, that wasn't my doing, you know?
Yeah.
You know, that wasn't my... You know, I think the world... Me and Paul are still best friends now, but it was... you know, I knew he'd sort of, you know, got to the latter stages of his playing career and was an assistant and, you know, wasn't... When I was there as manager, Paul was my assistant.
Mm-hmm.
And he understands now, but at the time, I think he got a bit of a cob on at me at times. I would not let him miss a training session or a warm-up to help me. I wanted him to be a player first and foremost, and it wouldn't be at the sacrifice of missing any training. And we speak about it now. At the time, he thought I was being, you know, but I wasn't. It was important that I had him, because Paul was a really, you know, integral part of that team.
So he played for Luton against Cambridge whilst he was on loan from Cambridge, but was still Cambridge assistant manager. Did you guys go into that game going, this is odd? You know, he's on loan, he's assistant manager, he's been allowed to play. Like, I'm assuming this was admin mess up on the Cambridge end, right? It wouldn't be something Luton would have arranged.
I can't really remember that, to be honest. I can't remember the full sort of story behind that, but...
Yeah. What was he like in the dressing room before the game? Was he sort of a bit apprehensive about...
I honestly cannot remember. Yeah, it's a bit, you know, like I said, it was a...
long time ago.
Yeah, it was a long time ago. Plus, it wasn't, you know, I wasn't in charge of that. You know what I mean? It was other managers who were in charge of Cambridge and Luton at the time. I was sort of there and part of it, but I can't remember the decisions or the feelings around it.
Yeah. Go on. Last question about Luton then. After the sort of playoff final heartbreak for Cambridge, you had it happen again for you as a Luton manager. Like, how did that feel, getting so close for a second time and again just falling short?
Again, but you know, we performed on the day. We played well. We deserved to win. You know, the last kick of the game, well, last header of the game, we've hit the inside of the post and it's gone into the keeper's hands. And then to get beat on a penalty shootout, I thought was cruel.
Yeah. All right, two last questions, Gary, because I've taken up too much of your time. But what would you say your favourite Cambridge United memory is, if you've got one?
I mean, obviously the semi-final
Yeah.
That one was definitely one. But it was loads. I honestly, you know, we've got, you know, we still speak about it now. Me and my wife, we loved our time at Cambridge. It's just so many to mention, really.
That's great to hear. That's great to hear. Like, maybe that makes answering this next question easy, but if the stars were to ever align and a role in any capacity were to come up at Cambridge United, I asked that on the day after our manager left. But in any capacity, would you ever come back to Cambridge if the opportunity arose?
Do you want to be my agent, John?
I'll give it a go, mate. Yeah.
Listen, you know, I don't want to. Listen, I loved it. I loved my time at Cambridge. It was. I don't think anyone. It's no secret. You know, I only had 12 months there, but I did. I loved my time there, loved living there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we actually went back. So my two things. First of all, funny you're talking about the playoffs. My three kids, my father-in-law calls them the playoff kids. They were all born around the playoffs. So,
fair enough.
And then the other thing is, because we never had our kids when we lived in Cambridge, we took them. We had a few days there, just sort of showing kids around where we used to live and, you know, where we used to spend time and the football ground, and it was good. That was good.
Amazing. So, well, hopefully see you at a game at some point in the not too distant future. Might be hard given you've got two jobs, but Gary, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you, mate.
Jordan, thank you very much, mate. Take care.